Well, did the President of the United States break the law? Or did we do something heroic to rescue a POW? Or was he not even a POW to start?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'd like to say to Bo right now, who's having trouble speaking English, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Zayabayim.
All right. The words of the father of the freed POW in Afghanistan, speaking at the White House with President Obama by his side, praising Allah. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. A bunch of things I want to talk to you about today. Didn't get to them yesterday because of a special interview that we did with David Kyle Foster in his book, Love Hunger. But some things from last week I want to talk about further. Violence in our society, and is there a connection between violence in society and violent media, entertainment, be it TV, movies, or video games? I want to talk about the controversy surrounding our president's actions and the release of Sergeant Bergdahl, a POW, whom many of his fellow soldiers are saying was actually a deserter, and others saying definitely a traitor. Something to talk about. Israel is involved in prisoner swaps. These things are very traumatic for many reasons, but now there are specific questions as to whether our president broke the law or not. So I'm going to get your feedback on that. Planned Parenthood has what I am calling a pastoral letter from hell. Is Planned Parenthood with a spiritually written letter encouraging those considering abortion to talk to clergy and to find out they're really not doing anything wrong in having an abortion? I want to talk to you about that. And Steve Dace, radio host and columnist Steve Dace, is very upset with what's happened with our president. And in the Washington Times has an editorial, Obama brings a deserter home, but deserts American pastor imprisoned in Iran. So a bunch of things to talk to you about. I want to get your feedback. I've got some things I want to share, of course, but I want to get your feedback. I wrote an article yesterday called On With It, a word of encouragement, word of faith, word of hope. I want to share that with you as well. So a lot of ground to cover today on The Line of Fire. A little later this afternoon at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, I'm going to be doing an online debate with Dr. Don Preston on the future of Israel's salvation. Does Romans 11, 25 to 27 speak of a future salvation of Israel, the Jewish people? Dr. James White will be moderating that. That'll be 4:30 live online. You'll be able to watch it. For links, just go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. We have links up there. We've tweeted them out as well, and we'll do so again in a little while. Did it disturb you to hear the father of this released POW praising Allah in Arabic? Yes, he speaks to his son in Pashto, saying, hey, this is your dad. Allegedly, the son, having been a prisoner of war so long, is disoriented and is having a hard time speaking English. Again, not quite sure how that would work, what the nature of the captivity was. I have no issue with a father and mother reaching out with compassion and wanting to see their son home. Who wouldn't do that? And I have no issue with a soldier overseas having questions about what we're doing and getting disoriented about it. But did he finish his term of service properly? Did he desert? Was he a traitor? And is his father now saying, hey, we're both converts to Islam. We're in this together. If so, how does that affect their view on the Taliban and terrorism? Whole bunch of questions. But question for you. Did our president do the right thing? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Did President Obama do the right thing, swapping five Taliban leaders, five terrorists, for our last POW in Afghanistan? Did he break the law? 866-34-TRUTH. Back with your calls.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. A lot of controversy surrounding President Obama's actions, bringing back our last POW in Afghanistan. Those who served with him said that he wandered off the base on his own, that he was a deserter. Some say he should be court-martialed. Others say he was actually a traitor. Others say, come on, he's a POW, suffered for years in captivity. Will we do what we can to bring him back? Others say, yeah, but we don't negotiate with terrorists, and we certainly don't release terrorists in exchange for a POW. And the president broke the law. So a whole lot to discuss regarding this. 866-348-7884. There are others who say, come on, American soldiers died looking for him, and he was a deserter. Let me say again, I'm raising questions here, but let me say from the start, I have no problem with someone who is serving overseas beginning to question what we're doing, beginning to say, is it worth it? Beginning to say, do we have a strategy? Beginning to say, is it in the best interest of the people of Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever the base might be? Or are we waging this war the right way? People are people. They see great suffering around them. It's easy to question things. I have no problem with that. The issue is that you've made an oath to serve, and therefore you have to serve conscientiously and with honor until you do leave. But to question things, or for parents to question things, or to question the rightness of a war, I don't have an issue with that. And if someone converts to Islam, either under duress or by their own will, that's ultimately something between them and God. Nonetheless, all of these questions, factors, issues play in together. Before we play some more audio clips and get to your calls, I just want to mention something first to Gina Douglas. If you're listening, I'll use the whole name as you did online. I wrote an article called Rush Limbaugh, the Drag Queen, speaking of RuPaul, and the Judge, speaking of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, posted in various websites, Christian Post and Town Hall and others. And I noticed on Christian Post, I don't normally follow the comments there or many of the websites, especially if there are a lot, but there were just a few. And I noticed that Gina, who was the Tina that Rush referred to, apparently getting the name wrong, had taken real issue with what I had written and in very strong terms wanted to speak to me and said that they were going to make the call. So even though the subject matter is different today, your call is welcome. Our producer, Matt, weighed in on the site to welcome you to call. I promise you, my goal is not to attack you. My goal is not to win a verbal battle. My goal is to have civil interaction about a very difficult subject. Fair enough? So if you're listening, 866-34-TRUTH. Before we go to the phones, let's go to clip number 9. All right, Joey, are we there? Clip.
A lot of questions about how he originally was captured and whether or not he had deserted, had left his post. Is that going to be investigated? And if it's found that he did indeed leave his post, will he be disciplined or has already paid the price?
Certainly, anybody who's been held in those conditions in captivity for 5 years has paid an extraordinary price. But that is really not the point. The point is that he's back. He's going to be safely reunited with his family. He served the United States with honor and distinction, and we'll have the opportunity eventually to learn what has transpired in the past years. But what's most important now is his health and well-being, that he have the opportunity to recover in peace and security and be reunited with his family, which is why this is such a joyous day.
Certainly, if I was family, if I was the parents, the mom or the dad of the prisoner of war, it would be quite a joyous day to have him home. Friends and others who've been wanting him to get back home, surely a joyous day. And surely if he has suffered as a prisoner of war and suffered from poor treatment and 5 years in captivity, yes, that is a serious price to pay. Does it relate, though, to a court-martial? Does it relate to if, in fact, these are just ifs, he was guilty of deserting, if in fact his reports held that he actually became a traitor and was teaching Taliban certain things that he had learned in the military, that is quite another story. Also, Susan Rice, Ambassador Susan Rice, was speaking there, interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, as to the question of who was, as to the question of whether the president broke the law. Joey, let's go to clip number 11. And this is a response to the question, did President Obama break the law in terms of what he did?
You've looked at the law. You've looked at the signing statement. You've gone through it. Did the president break the law by engaging in this deal?
Oh, I think he clearly broke the law. The law says 30 days notice. He didn't give 30 days notice. Now, it is true that he issued a signing statement, but signing statements are not law. Signing statements are the president's opinion about what the law should mean.
All right, and that is Wolf Blitzer speaking with CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin. When I posted this question on my Facebook pages, simply stated the question asked, did President Obama do the right thing in swapping five Taliban leaders for our last POW in Afghanistan? The responses have been overwhelmingly negative. Those of you who listen to this show on a regular basis know that Mr. Obama's name does not occur much. I do not speak much about President Obama, and I'm not an Obama basher. There are things he's done and stood for that I disagree with to the core of my being and feel are wrong and destructive, but this is not a political talk show. This, and I am not a conservative talk show host who makes his name or living by bashing the president. So, we're asking questions. I'll weigh in with my opinion. But to the phones, starting in Washington, D.C., Andrew, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, I'm thinking the president did the right thing. You can see that America is so much divided. If he had, the soldier were to be Republican would think he's hallelujah, would think he's praise. If the soldier is a Democrat, the Democrat would think he's praise. If the soldier is a Muslim, Muslims will sing his praise. If he had released the pastor imprisoned in Iraq, Christians will sing his praise. He's the president of the United States. He has to do what is right, and I think he did what is right.
Andrew, why do you make this Republican-Democrat issue? That troubles me.
No, because the country is divided.
Is there any such thing as right versus wrong?
Yes, there's certainly as right and wrong.
Okay. So how about if we separate that? It would help a lot, because I'm not making this a political issue. It would really help a lot if you could get away from the comparison between George Bush and Barack Obama and simply address the issue. Otherwise, it becomes very divisive and very confusing.
Doc, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, it depends upon the person who is making it right and who is making it wrong. So
there's no absolute right or wrong then in this cases.
It depends upon how you take it. We know that the country is divided. If the president swings to the Republican side, they will clap for him.
Andrew, you keep missing the point, and it's a sad diversion. It means you're unable to think of the issue itself, and you're making it into a political football to kick around. So here, I want to point out two things, Andrew. Number one, I just quoted a CNN legal analyst. CNN is very much pro-Obama. And the CNN legal analyst, Jeffrey Toobin, said that the president broke the law. But number two, if Mr. Obama had bent over backwards to get our pastor out of Iran, who's been tortured and beaten and imprisoned, if he had done that, don't you think the whole country, Republican and Democrat, would be cheering for him?
Muslims will say it's wrong. Christians will say it's right. I'm a Christian myself. I am Holy Spirit. I'm a filled Christian. And it looks like the whole country is divided upon anything that comes up. Everything is politicized.
You're adding to the division, though, Andrew. You're stoking fires that I didn't even stoke. You're making this a political issue. You're getting away from Christian principles.
No, it is. unless you deny it. But it is. It is. Now, because there's a black president.
Oh, come on, Andrew, that's bigotry.
It's true.
You're talking like a racist now. Andrew, you are talking like a racist. How dare you? How dare you bring race into this? That is outrageous, sir. And as a Christian speaking to a Christian, I tell you that's bigotry and that's ugly. This has zero to do with race. How dare you bring race into this, sir?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I got to be totally candid with you. How many years into Mr. Obama's presidency are we? And by the way, I say Mr. out of respect. I don't just say Obama or I don't just say Bush. I'll either say President or Mr. But it is absolutely outrageous to me. I don't care what the color of the caller is, what their background is, what their ethnicity is, to blame all criticism of President Obama on race. That's utterly outrageous. I might as well have said that anyone that differed with George Bush had an issue with him because he was from Texas or because he was white or because he graduated from Yale or whatever, or because he was once the owner of the Texas Rangers or whatever role he had in sports. I mean, that is so ugly and outrageous to me. And so biased and bigoted, it's a statement full of racism. It boggles my mind, to be honest with you, especially when someone says they're a Christian. It boggles my mind. I look at these things and I weigh them. I don't see the president as black or white. I don't see that's not an issue to me. It's never been an issue to me. The only issue was I really wanted to vote for the first black president. I wanted to have the privilege of doing that. I was excited about it and thrilled that it was going to happen in my lifetime, but I couldn't vote for Barack Obama in good conscience because of what he stood for. But I really wanted to be part of that. That was something important to me as well as an American. I wanted to be part of it and wasn't able to be. In fact, I had to warn people. I had to warn people as to where he would stand on abortion and where he would stand on redefining marriage and homosexual issues. And of course, many have said, yeah, you were right. We didn't believe you, but you were right. Others have said we didn't want to vote for him but didn't see there was an alternative. I understand all the issues. But to make criticism of the president into an issue of race, it's ugly and bigoted and biased and speaks of a wrong root in someone's own heart and mind that they're unable to see larger issues. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's just play clip number 13, then I want to go back to the phones. This is regarding whether President Obama broke the law. Wolf Blitzer is speaking with him and CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin. Remember, this is not Fox News. This is not Rush Limbaugh. This is CNN. Clip number 13.
You know, liberals were outraged by George W. Bush's signing statements. They thought he was deciding which laws he was going to follow and which laws he wasn't.
So was President Bush breaking the law, too?
There may have been examples where he did, but certainly this is an example of a signing statement where the president is taking power for himself that the law didn't give him. He's explicitly contradicting it.
You realize, of course, you're accusing the president of the United States of breaking the law.
Yes, exactly. Exactly the case, and that is the issue. 866-34-TRUTH. That's one of the issues. But let me say again, whether it is right to do this or not, Ambassador Susan Rice said, look, we don't have the same players as normal. In other words, we're not negotiating with Japan or with Germany or with Russia for the exchange of POWs. The only ones we can negotiate with are those that would be called terrorists. Others say, fine, the president was required to give 30 days notice. Others say, well, not this guy because he was a deserter and a traitor. Others say you don't release Taliban terrorists who have blood on their hands who killed Americans. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Princess in Englewood, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, welcome back from the Holy Land.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm glad you arrived safely, praise God. Now, I want to weigh in on this. I want you to give me a clear chance to explain this. No, the president is wrong if he break the law. He have to abide by the law, number one. Number two, we have, I believe, the word of God, and it have to be fulfilled. In the book of Daniel, chapter 2, God speak about a last 10-toe world government led by a leader. And so it's time for all the nations, including the United States, to go down. So it's time for the president, if he had to be impeached, praise the Lord. Time for him to be impeached, impeach him if he break the law. And let's get on with the word of God. How you like that?
All right. Well, as always, loud and clear, Princess, thank you for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. In a few minutes, I'm going to bring Steve Dace on with us, and he's going to be discussing his editorial in the Washington Times. Obama brings a deserter home but deserts American pastor imprisoned in Iran. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Sam in Washington, D.C. Thank you for calling the broadcast, Sam.
Thanks for having me. I am a little baffled because I work with the military, but I've heard your statements. You're not really bashing Obama, but I don't know if anyone worked as vigorously to arrest George Bush for breaking the NATO treaty and starting this war. All of this could have been avoided. My bottom line is the gentleman
Sam, one quick question. You were saying that with all of the calls, Lynch, Bush, and these horrific things being said about him, just like there's horrific things that are being said about President Obama, none of his critics went after him? You're saying that none of his critics went after him as aggressively as people are questioning President Obama's current move?
Sir, if they have, then we would be seeing Bush face war crimes, trial, for starting that war.
So you're saying that none of his Democratic critics and none of his radical critics who were calling for the lynching of President Bush went after him like this?
Haven't heard it. I keep my ears.
Well, you must have missed it. You must have missed it, sir. But anyhow, by the way, Sam, it would be difficult to be more wrong in terms of what you just said. But it underscores something that people. That's fine. People who are super.
Someone home who served our country. We put these guys to work. We break them. We make them to be killers. And then we tell them it's wrong to bring them home.
No, Sam, I'm not arguing that point. I'm perfectly happy for people to defend what the president did on that. I'm asking for discussion. What bothers me, and I'm pointing out the hypocrisy of it, is these bizarre statements that are being made. That if people have an issue with what the president did, it's because he's black. Come on! Get over that! It's nonsense. Oh, there's some that do, and there's some that have a problem with me because I'm a Jew. And there's some that have a problem with someone else because they're female, or someone else. But it boggles my mind that people who were deaf to the massive, ugly attacks on President Bush that he endured constantly. Come on, there is a constant every day how many people have been killed in battle. Every day, all this being announced, and when it's President Obama, the liberal media is silent on it. There's this massive double standard. But people, I'm fine with saying that all the presidents get attacked. I'm fine with saying that. I'm fine with saying that we're a divided country. No argument. But come on, at least be listening to what's happening. But recognize what's happening in the society around this. All right, friends, we are, by God's grace, uniquely positioned on the front lines. We are working with leaders around America and in other nations behind the scenes for righteousness. And having come back from Israel, you better believe we are totally on the front lines reaching the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I want to encourage you to partner with us. We've never done this in the history of our broadcast, but my entire 5-volume set, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus with postage, close to $150 value, your gift of $100 or more, partnering with us, I want to send you the entire 5-volume set. It's a treasury. It's a lifetime collection. It's the work of many decades. It's the only thing of its kind, and it'll help you to pray with us for the salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. This is available by phone only, so call 1-800-278-9978. Your partnership gift, standing with us, of $100 or more, the complete 5-volume set, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to lay out the guidelines again for our discussion. I mean, I didn't lay these out at the outset. I just assumed they were self-evident. We're simply asking the question, do you believe that President Obama did the right thing or the wrong thing in swapping five Taliban terrorists for the release of our final prisoner of war in Afghanistan? The questions would be, is it right to do it at any cost or price? I mean, after all, it's the release of five terrorists with blood on their hands, some with close ties to Osama bin Laden. Did the president break the law in doing so? Was the prisoner of war a deserter or a traitor? Does that color things, or do we still try to get him back? These are fair questions to ask. In fact, White House insiders have said that they are surprised by the negative reaction. What we will not do is make this a Republican versus Democrat issue. What we will not do is make this a race issue, because that is not the issue, and that's not what we're talking about. And personally, after spending years and years and years sowing seeds of good faith into my black listeners, white listeners, male listeners, female listeners, Asian listeners, Hispanic listeners, Jewish listeners, Gentile listeners, so that any of you who've listened to me for any length of time know I'm going to shoot straight and honest, and there's not a racist bone in my body, or a political bone in my body for that matter. To me, these are issues before the Lord that we sort out together as God's people. I'm not going to have this radio broadcast turned into a forum for people to espouse biased and bigoted ideas without a response from me. So before we go back to your phone calls, I want to bring on the air Steve Dace. Steve is also a talk radio host, nationally syndicated talk radio host. He's author of Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. And he's got an article in the Washington Times. Steve, thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire today.
Always good to talk to you, Michael. Thanks, brother.
All right, Steve, we've got a couple minutes before this first break, but just lay out in short what you wrote in the Washington Times: Obama brings a deserter home but deserts American pastor imprisoned in Iran.
Well, I think it's a very simple question. At a time when we apparently had some leverage with Iran in order to get them to the table for, really, I think, a Faustian bargain, but a deal nonetheless, why did we not use the leverage we had with them at the time to secure the release of Saeed Abedini? In fact, at the time we made the deal with Iran, President Obama, Michael, had still not even publicly referred to Saeed Abedini. That only came after we had the deal, and then that's when he made the now famous phone call. But Saeed Abedini remains in prison in Iran. His family just celebrated his second birthday without him. He had to spend 2 months in a hospital for taking a vicious beating from prison guards in Iran. So he stays there, and there's no justice for him or his family. But we traded the five worst, arguably worst enemy combatants we had in custody in order to get a guy that his former platoon mates now are coming out of the woodwork in various media, not conservative media, but media like Newsweek and other liberal media. They're coming out of the woodwork to say, hey, several of our guys lost their lives going after this guy that we were told after the fact turned out to be a deserter. So we traded five of the worst terrorists we had in custody for a deserter, yet we deserted Saeed Abedini and have left him still within the bowels of Iran in a prison there. There's no justice there, if you ask them.
Got it. Steve, if folks want to connect with your work, what's the best way to do that?
Easiest thing to do is just to visit our website. It's stevedace.com, D-E-A-C-E.
stevedace.com. Steve, 30 seconds. Should America have done anything to bring this POW home?
Sure, but I just don't think that the distinction is, if you look at the article, Michael, in the Washington Times I wrote, look at the bios of the men we released. This is an absolutely terrible trade. That is way too high of a price to pay for one POW, especially because we probably could have gotten him for a lot less. And now we've released their five worst people into the wild.
All right, a couple more minutes with Steve Dace. We come back. Let's take a look at the terrorist release. Doesn't Israel do this kind of thing to release its own POWs? And then back with your calls.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before I get back to your calls, I want to spend a few more minutes with my guest, radio host and columnist Steve Dace, to visit his website, Steve Dace, D-E-A-C-E, stevedace.com. His article in the Washington Times, his op-ed piece, Obama Brings a Deserter Home but Deserts American Pastor Imprisoned in Iran. And Steve, in your article, you list the five men that our president decided to release. Mullah Muhammad Fazi, former Taliban Army Chief of Staff, wanted by the United Nations for war crimes, including the slaughter of thousands of Muslims. That's just the first of five. Why in the world did we do this? In other words, were we told, from your understanding, that unless it's these guys who are some of the worst, the swap is not going to happen?
I wish I could answer your question without sounding partisan, Michael, because you know me, I am certainly no friend to the ruling class in either political parties. You know that very well.
Yep.
But the truth of the matter is, the foreign policy exploits of this administration, if the previous administration's foreign policy exploits were dangerous, this is deceptive. These exploits are deceptive. We've got, for example, a national security advisor who went on CNN, Susan Rice, who already lied a year and a half ago about Benghazi on national TV. She went on TV, said to CNN's Candy Crowley that Bergdahl was captured in the line of duty. That's a lie. And they knew it was a lie all along. And they had the soldiers that were involved in trying to get him back 5 years ago keep quiet for the last 5 years because they were concerned for his safety. They knew that he was a deserter. So the truth is, we have an administration that props up the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And then when there is an insurrection there to get rid of their jihadist oppressors, sides on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood and not the freedom fighters in the streets of Egypt, but sides on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood that's raising and burning Coptic churches to the ground. This is the confused and deceptive foreign policy of this administration. So your guess is as good as mine, my friend, on what their true motivations were. But I would ask anybody in your audience a simple question. If you look at the biographies, you mentioned the first bio, and there's even more where that came from, including one of these individuals we believe personally oversaw Osama bin Laden's training facilities. If you look at the bios of these five men and ask yourself, is the world a safer place right now because they're out on the streets of Qatar? I doubt there's anybody in your audience, regardless of their demographic, that would say, yes, the world is a safer place. And that means it's a bad deal.
Yeah, and you think if these were men that we could have had in prison for life, certainly the crimes they committed would have merited that. And you understand they're not going to leave saying, oh, America treated me kindly, now I'll treat America kindly. They'll try to make up for lost time. Last question, Steve, before you go. What about when Israel does a prisoner swap? This has been something they've done, and at times they've released prisoners with blood on their hands for the murder of Israelis. It's traumatizing for the nation, but they felt they need to do it sometimes for the peace process or to get a prisoner back like Gilad Shalit. Do you see a difference when Israel does it, or do you still see that as equally wrongheaded?
Well, I think in this case, Michael, it's apples and oranges. For example, we're the aggressor in this relationship. We went there. We deposed this regime. They're gone. We don't need to make peace. We're making peace with the Taliban. So we're telling now the 2,000 Americans that lost their lives over there and their friends and their loved ones, hey, basically, it was all for naught. We did all this. You lost your lives. You spent all this money only so we can release back into the wild the very people we sent you over there to get rid of. This is a different situation where we are the aggressor in this relationship. There's no peace process. We literally conquered a country. And the fact that we're treating it as such is why these five villains are now out on the streets. And if anybody believes they're going to keep their word, or the government of Qatar and the Islamists in that country are going to keep a good eye on them and keep them safe from the general population, you know, I've got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. I don't think anybody believes that at all.
Got it. Yeah, loud and clear as always. Thanks, Steve, for joining us. Steve Dace, DEACE.com. His new book, Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Always good to talk to you, Michael. Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to go to your phones, and then I'm going to play a clip from Ambassador Susan Rice, where she alleges that Sergeant Bergdahl was captured in the battlefield, literally taken in battle. Let's go to Long Island, Wyandanch. Lynette, welcome to the Line of Fire.
God bless you, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much for the privilege of speaking out on this issue. And thank you also for letting us hear the eloquent gentleman who preceded me. My concern is that this is such an unwise move. The scriptures always teach us that we have to remember that we're not fighting against flesh and blood, but we're fighting against principalities. We're fighting against rulers of wickedness in high places. And this is why we never engage in trades or swaps where people who are admittedly the enemy, who are trying to destroy us, are now given free rein and in exchange for a person. Bringing a person home is a good thing, but how we do it, the wisdom of it, or the lack thereof, is my concern.
Yep. Listen.
And so I definitely feel that it was very wrong, and especially in the light of, as the previous gentleman stated, people who are definitely innocent and have been victimized and who are U.S. citizens and who are being persecuted for their faith, such as Pastor Saeed, such as Mrs. Miriam Ibrahim in the mm-hmm. Sudan, who just gave birth to her second child with her feet fettered to the floor of a prison. And these children are U.S. citizens and babies. And they are living in a prison with their mother, who was there exclusively for the reason that she's a Christian.
Right, and refusing to convert to Islam and married to a Sudanese American Christian. Because of that, since she's still considered a Muslim, her marriage is not considered valid, therefore it's considered adultery. Where are our efforts to get her released? Fair questions, Lynette. Thank you for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dan in Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, honestly, I think it was extremely poor judgment, because there's a reason we don't make deals with terrorists is because then it makes the rest of our troops part. I mean, if you're willing to trade for the life of one troop and, you know, give them five people in exchange, let's say keep them from thinking that from now on we can take more troops and get exactly what we want. And that's my big fear.
Right. Got it. All clear. I mean, these are always issues that come up. We know that Hamas desperately has been trying for years to capture another Israeli soldier, knowing the power of holding him as hostage in terms of negotiating and getting their own people free. Thank you, Dan, for the call. Let's go to Lafaya in Washington, D.C., or Lafay. I'm not sure which is it. How do you pronounce your name?
Lafay.
Lafay. You know, after I said Lafaya, I thought, no, that's got to be Lafay. Sorry about that. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
That's quite all right. Thanks. You know, I thought I was fairly informed on this, but apparently I'm not. I got from the newspaper that I currently read that the people that were released while they were suspected of being really bad terrorists, there wasn't enough against them to actually imprison them, and that's why they were still down there. So I am kind of confused, I guess, about the whole situation. Also, not really understanding exactly what the president did that he wasn't supposed to do.
Yeah, and there are a lot of issues, Lafay. As far as the men released, everything I understand is they were serious criminals. Nurullah Nuri, top Taliban military leader who's also wanted by the UN for war crimes. Abdul Haq Wasiq, top Taliban intelligence officer, helped coordinate alliances with the Islamists to fight alongside the Taliban and against the U.S. in Afghanistan. This is from Steve Dace's article in the Washington Times. Khairullah Karikwa, a former governor of a key Afghan province, carried out important missions for the infamous Mullah Omar, spiritual head of the Taliban, also a drug dealer suspected of personally overseeing Osama bin Laden's training facilities, and Mohammad Nabi, senior Taliban military official with ties to multiple terrorist organizations, reportedly helped coordinate attacks on American forces with these groups. In which case, all of these men would have American blood on their hands. The issue with the president is, by law, he's required to notify Congress 30 days in advance before taking action like this, and that was not done. And that's where some of the criticism is that's being discussed. But, LaFay, thank you so much for calling. Got an interesting audio clip to play for you when we come back, plus your calls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, just a reminder, if you missed it in the first hour, first half hour, an hour and 40 minutes from now, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, I'm scheduled to do a Skype debate with Dr. Don Preston on Israel and eschatology. Does Romans 11, 25 to 27 refer to Israel's future salvation? My friend Dr. James White will be moderating. You can just go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, for a link. We'll also be posting another link probably about 4 o'clock today, so be on the lookout for it. We'll be tweeting that out. And if you're on my email list, we sent out an email to that effect as well with the links and the info. Let's listen to Ambassador Susan Rice, clip number 6, as she's talking about Sergeant Bergdahl.
As you've seen, the criticism already coming in. Martha Raddatz mentioned some of it from Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. We also have the top Republicans on the Armed Services Committee saying this is going to put Americans at risk, threaten American lives because you broke the policy of trading with terrorists. What's your reaction to that?
Well, George, this is a very special situation. Sergeant Bergdahl wasn't simply a hostage. He was an American prisoner of war, captured on the battlefield. We have a sacred obligation that we have upheld since the founding of our republic to do our utmost to bring back our men and women who were taken in battle. And we did that in this instance. If for some reason we took a position now in the 21st century when some of our adversaries may not be traditional state actors, that we would not do our utmost to bring our prisoners of war home, that would break faith with the American people and with the men and women who serve in uniform. So regardless of who may be holding an American prisoner of war, we must do our best to bring him or her back.
All right, that was Susan Rice on CNN speaking with George Stephanopoulos. Notice she used the words that he was taken in battle and that he was captured on the battlefield. Joey, clip number 1. These are soldiers who say, no, Sergeant Bergdahl was a deserter. Others say he was a traitor. Again, whether we should have made efforts to bring him back, that's a separate question. Whether President Obama did the right thing did he break the law by not giving Congress 30 days notice? That's another question. And yet another question, the men chosen, 5 Taliban leaders whom we can say either certainly or presumably had American blood on their hands, to release them in exchange for this one prisoner. And what if he was a deserter? Does that color what price should have been paid? So you'll hear some different voices here, starting with an ABC reporter and then some soldiers. Clip number 1.
Former members of his unit have taken to the airwaves and social media, calling him a deserter and alleging other soldiers were actually killed searching for him.
They were never nationally televised for their sacrifices in the way that he is, and he pretty much voluntarily walked away and in turn caused the actions that may have killed them.
Yeah, and there are many other soldiers saying, absolutely, we knew the case. Remember when it happened, he walked away, he was a deserter. Let me say again, I have no problem with someone serving in the military and then having questions about our policies. Serving in the military, watching colleagues die, watching those on the other side die, maybe questioning what we're doing and so on. I have no problem with someone questioning our policies or questioning the rightness of war and then serving out their term keeping their oath and then coming back to the state saying, hey, I served, but I differ with it. That's very different than desertion, if that's the case here, or worse still, being a traitor. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to White Plains, New York. Rich, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call. I think this is just another disgraceful move by our so-called president, and I'd like to take this opportunity to debunk the rationale that they use for the move that they just made. They've said that we always have prisoner exchanges at the end of wars. Well, Dr. Brown, it's news to me, but I didn't know that the war on terror was over. Okay? And another to that point, again, prisoner exchanges take place between countries, not between a country and a terrorist organization. So that whole argument about, oh, there's always prisoner exchange at the end of a war, that's complete bunk. Okay, number
all right, so Rich, yeah, just a question for you. Susan Rice, Ambassador Rice, said, we have different players now. We're not dealing with traditional nations. We're dealing with terrorist organizations. She didn't say that overtly. Let's just say that this was a man who was fighting for our country and saving the lives of Americans, was captured by the Taliban, and they were the ones holding him, and he was being tortured, and he was our last prisoner of war there. Who do we deal with then if we're trying to get him free?
Well, then there's the other argument to back that up. There's redundancy with regard to not doing what the president did. And in that regard, you go back to your rule of thumb that you don't negotiate with terrorists. And that was supposed to be our policy, okay? Mm-hmm. And when they make the other argument that, well, you know, we always try to bring, you know, our soldiers who served honorably, and there's the key, home, that's not the case either. And what's interesting is you have, and it's so great that it's happening simultaneously, so you can see where the president actually stands on this. You have a two-tour combat veteran being abused in a Mexican jail, and the president refuses to intervene. Someone who did serve honorably, no question, who simply made a mistake by going into Mexico when he shouldn't have, and the president refuses. The Secretary of State is doing nothing. They're letting him languish in a Mexican jail, knowing who. But here we have another soldier of dubious, I mean, we don't know, by all accounts, he's a deserter.
Yeah, and Rich, just gotta jump in. I'm out of time here, but you made your points very eloquently and passionately. President Obama is my president. He's not my so-called president. He is my president, although I abhor some of his policies, deeply differ with them. He remains my president, just like if folks didn't like George Bush, he was still the president. We need to pray that he will walk worthy of that calling, the same with any president we have. But Rich, thank you for weighing in. And I'm glad you brought up the soldier who is in Mexico right now. Very fair comparison. Friends, I'm looking at a note here from a listener who says, you're one of those who are called to be a leader on the front lines of our battle for the kingdom of God. Be encouraged and know that many stand with you and pray for you earnestly. Keep up the good fight of faith, soldier. Others said, Mike, Dr. Brown, you're like a voice for me. You get to speak what's in my heart. Someone contacted us the other day and said when they saw me on Piers Morgan addressing him that they were literally shouting at the TV. They were glad to have our voice out there. Partner with us. I want to encourage you to make a substantial investment and to get something substantial. Your gift of $100 or more, I'm going to send you a series of volumes you'll treasure for many years to come. My entire 5-volume set, nothing like it of its kind, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. You also get it at a discount by doing this. Your gift of $100 or more, 1-800-278-9978. Partner with us, would you? 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, let us not divide over Republican, Democrat, right or wrong. Let us look at righteousness and let the dividing line. Well, did the President of the United States break the law? Or did we do something heroic to rescue a POW, or was he not even a POW to start?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You know, right at the end of the last segment, as the clock was short and ticking, I kind of tripped over my words, but I realized what it was. I had in the back of my mind, so I was about to say the words, the dividing line, that at 4:30 today, so an hour and a half from now, Eastern Standard Time, my dear friend, Dr. James White, who hosts the Dividing Line radio broadcast, will be moderating a debate between Dr. Don Preston and yours truly on Romans 11, 25 to 27. Does it speak of the future salvation of Israel? Right around 4 o'clock, so an hour from now, we'll post a link on Facebook, tweet that out. Also, if you're on my email list, check your emails because we sent out a notice about that earlier today. I'm going to continue this discussion. A lot of folks wanted to weigh in on the question of the release of Sergeant Bergdahl. Was he a deserter or not? How does that affect the larger question? Was it right to negotiate with terrorists? What about the five-man arch-terrorist whom we released in exchange for Sergeant Bergdahl? And did the president break the law by not giving Congress 30 days' notice? Questions that we will get to. I also want to put this question out for you. Are you ready? I want to put this out for you. I've written, out of my last 300 or 400 articles, I think I've written three dealing with violent video games, violent media, and violent crimes. And what surprises me is I get these very aggressive, sometimes even nasty responses, sometimes even from Christians, kind of, how dare you speak evil of these violent video games? And there are millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of us playing these games, and we're not violent people, so get over it. You're focusing on the wrong thing. Well, I mean, obviously, I've written on it just a few times in hundreds of articles, so it's hardly anything that has been major in my own attention. But I wonder why people react like that, especially when I say, look, I understand that we're talking about someone who's unstable or unbalanced to start. That someone like that is the one that could be pushed from fantasy into reality, reality into fantasy, back and forth. And that seems to be pretty well documented. I also don't see how anyone could say that as a follower of Jesus, if the video games are filled with gratuitous violence and profanity and blatant sexuality, that you could play those, be absorbed with them for hours, and practice Philippians 4:8, which is to think about those things which are noble and true and pure. But I just wonder sometimes, why do people react so strongly, especially when I say, look, I'm not saying your average person playing them is going to go out and commit violent crimes. So that's another question I want to discuss, 866-34-TRUTH. And then I just want to read something to you from one of our listeners in Charlotte, North Carolina, named Erin. I think it's worth hearing what she has to say, because I had a guest on yesterday, David Kyle Foster, and his own journey into homosexual practice included sexual abuse as a child, included drug addiction, included male prostitution. And she wanted to make clear, hey, there for every person like that, there are other homosexual men and women who are fine people, fine family people, and we've interacted just a little bit on Facebook. Normally, I'm not able to see most of the comments, but happen to spot hers. We've interacted a little bit. I want to read that to you. I think it's important to hear that aspect as well as we continue to interact on these subjects. 866-34-TRUTH. Here's a quote for you from Leonard Ravenhill. How can you pull down strongholds of Satan if you don't even have the strength to turn off your TV? What do you think of that?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. A few different things that I do want to discuss with you. Spent a lot of the first hour talking about the exchange of prisoners that President Obama orchestrated. Many are saying he broke the law by not giving Congress 30 days notice. Others are saying that regardless of breaking the law, it was an unethical thing to do to deal with terrorists. Others are saying it doesn't matter. The fact is this was not a true POW. This was a deserter. The father, in a quote that is a bit chilling for me to hear, comforts his son newly released from captivity by saying the Arabic words, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, which is the opening words of Fatiha, the opening words of the Quran, and repeated in prayer in the name of Allah, the Merciful and Gracious, basically having converted to Islam, which his son allegedly did in captivity. And anyway, a whole lot of other issues. Of course, you care about each individual involved and its parents. You do whatever you could to get your son home. But a lot of issues to discuss and think through. I want to make plain, this is not a Republican-Democrat issue. If you want to get me a little bit annoyed, try to make it into a Republican-Democrat issue, all right? And because that ain't the case, nor is it a black-white issue. Oh, please, let's just focus on the issues so we don't repeat some of the unnecessary stuff from the first hour. 866-34-TRUTH. Before we get back to that, a little bit about video games. I got into gadgets when they started coming out, the earliest video games as they started to come out, really got into playing them, really enjoyed them. And in the late 70s, early 80s, as Atari was coming out, there was another one called Intellivision. That animation was even better on those. And I had some sports games. There was a boxing game. There was a baseball game, a football game, a car racing game, and then a maze game. And I really got into playing it. Friends would come over. We played it for hours. And when God really lit a fresh fire in my own heart in 1982, I just quit playing them because, for me, they were just too addictive, and I got into them too much. Now, of course, compared to today, they'd be absolutely primitive. Absolutely primitive on every level. But I just quit, and then I realized that games were getting more and more vivid, more and more violent, and I thought all the more reason to stay away from them. So I've written on this a few times when it seems that killers, mass murderers, also were very into these games. For example, the Columbine murderers incessantly watched a horrifically bloody movie called Natural Born Killers, and what was it, Doom, Mortal Kombat, these violent games they played incessantly. Was that what helped push them over the edge if they were unstable to start? Or is this an unfair connection to make? So I've written about this saying, look, there's got to be a desensitizing that takes place. That seems obvious from other studies, and it could contribute to aggression, especially to someone who's unstable. Aaron Klein, radio host Aaron Klein, notice that one particular character from the Warcraft video games, Gromish Hellscream, seems to be one that the mass murderer Elliot Rogers modeled himself on. And, you know, parents, I would just encourage you to find out what your kids are playing. If they're sitting there playing video games, find out what they're actually playing. Find out the pull that these games have on them. Find out if they're part of some online reality community and they're getting absorbed into these characters. But listen to Elliot Rogers speaking here, clip number 14.
If I had it in my power, I would stop at nothing to reduce every single one of you to mountains of skulls and rivers of blood.
All right, and then this is the Hellscream character, as he's speaking something that Aaron Klein and others said, hey, it looks like Elliot Rogers is trying to model this video character. Clip number 15.
I have seen mountains of skulls and rivers of blood, and I will have my world!
Yeah, and for those listening that just jumped back from the radio, and yeah, that's stuff that your kids are playing. stuff like that. It's awfully demonic, to say the least. So some say that this murderer was trying to channel this demonic character. Obviously unstable, obviously responsible for his actions. Obviously, I can't imagine the agony in the families who were affected by this, and of course, the agony experienced by his own parents. The question is, are these things that we need to look at in terms of the effects of these games? So before we get back to the question about the president and the prisoner swap, let's just talk about this for a few moments. What do you think? Is there a connection? Is there a connection between violent acts and violent entertainment? Is there a desensitizing that takes place? Are there demonic activities that we are opening ourselves up to through this? Let's go to our friend, Dr. Garza in San Bernardino. Dr. Garza, I just, going through some emails while in Israel, spotted the email with your email address. So I will shoot you a note. I'm way behind, but I will shoot you a note. Welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Shalom. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and so your view on this, I'm interested to hear, because we've never connected on this front at all. So just curious to know where you're coming from.
Well, yeah, you know what? I have to say that I have a 21-year-old son, and he's a person for the last couple of years who plays video games to a point where it gets to me too much, hours and hours on end, where he's playing Grand Theft Auto. You know, he doesn't play the more, like you point out, more of these bloodshed games, but he does play like Grand Theft Auto. He plays maybe some military.
And by the way, I think Grand Theft Auto 5 is one of the bloodiest out there.
Yeah,
from what I understand.
Yes. And I agree. And here's the thing, you know, one of the colleges I teach at, I teach sociology, and I talk to my students, and there is definitely an influence, what level of influence, from the extreme where they try to act out to maybe an influence of, you know, wondering what it's like to do it but never really doing it and using the game as an outlet. But there are definitely influences that can become, if we're not careful, and I agree with you, demonic influences or coming from the other world where, you know, you're allowing this to enter your mind, which then we know from research, and I know you've touched on this, that we know that when you engulf yourself long enough into something, you start to either emulate it or wonder about it, or it starts to kind of slightly, take over your habits in certain ways.
I don't understand, aside from the question of a believer spending the amount of hours in it and then getting desensitized by it. You know, it's one thing if it's just a sports thing and you're spending hours and getting absorbed with it. That's a separate issue. Mm-hmm. But then the other issue is to get absorbed in stuff which is full of profanity, full of degrading of women and just making them into sexual creatures, to have all types of gratuitous violence where basically you're rewarded for acts of evil. And then you have here a character named Hellscream. It doesn't quite sound heavenly in that context. What about just the desensitizing effect of being bombarded by this day and night? And Genesis 6, God destroys the earth because it's become so violent, it'll destroy itself if it doesn't. I mean, do you see connections between desensitizing and just the violence of our society?
Oh, I see a definite connection. In fact, what I don't see a difference between the games that people play in that same tone, to music in that same tone, to movies in that same tone, and to anything else that people are putting themselves into. They're all connected, whether it's the video game, the music that's desensitizing with the profanities and the talking about women and making names for these women, or the movies you watch that do the same effect. They're all connected, and it seems that this is part of what people are hard to really understand, is that these influence and do have a part and sometimes a role in how people respond or act. Whether you're a Christian and you're a believer, sometimes it does have an effect, maybe not to the extreme, but it does.
Even just desensitizing or someone that's watching pornography all the time, they're going to be looking at women or men, whoever it is, the same way. Look, what you're about to hear is gross. It's demonic. If you want to turn the radio down for 30 seconds, go ahead. But this is a Hellscream who is claiming to be the ultimate superior one, wiping out humanity, whatever. This is Hellscream's laugh, clip number 18.
Ha 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 ha!
Yeah, Hellscream sounds like a right name for that. And then Elliot Rodger, is he trying to pattern himself after that laugh? Clip number 19.
I will punish all of you for it.
Yeah, boy, God have mercy on the victims of the families and those who are recovering. And in Jesus' name, we speak his name out into your listening atmosphere. Dr. Garza, thank you for the call and the observations. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As I speak with you, there is a prayer meeting taking place in Israel. I'm sure not just one. Friends of ours who are praying through the night for outpouring of the Spirit as it is Shavuot, the Feast of Weeks, Feast of Pentecost in the New Testament, when the Holy Spirit was poured out 50 days after the Passover. May God move in power around the earth. May God pour out his Spirit afresh on the lost sheep of the house of Israel and on the nations and on his people, the church. 866-34-TRUTH. As we go back now to the subject that we started with, let's just say Sergeant Bergdahl was a deserter. Should we still make efforts to bring him back? Of course, he's been brought back, but should we still be making those efforts? Another question. Under any circumstances, is it right to negotiate with terrorists? Ambassador Rice says, look, let's recognize this is a different era right now. We're not dealing with traditional nations. We are dealing with terrorists that, you know, not the same players, so how else are we going to get a prisoner of war back? And what about if the president broke the law? 866-34-TRUTH. The beginning of the first hour, I played a clip. I want to play it again. It's clip number 2. And this was at the conference at the White House, the news conference, where Sergeant Bergdahl's parents were there with President Obama. Look, if this is my kid, I'd want him out. I'd want him home. And if there were irregularities in his conduct, I would think, well, maybe there was something wrong, or maybe he was suffering from, you know, I give the benefit of the doubt as my kid. But this was especially disturbing to me. And by the way, the great majority of Muslims are not Taliban. The great majority of Muslims are not terrorists. The great majority of Muslims are not strapping suicide vests on and trying to blow up innocent people. I understand that. But given this context and the charges that Sergeant Bergdahl was a deserter, and then Taliban claims that he converted to Islam and was helping them with his knowledge of bombs, etc., whatever information he had, this just becomes more disturbing. It may be a father seeking to show solidarity, but it was disturbing to me. Clip number 2.
I'd like to say to Bo right now, who's having trouble speaking English, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Zayabayim.
So basically, praise Allah. This is your father. So in Arabic and then Pashto. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Pastor Art in Chicago, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
You're welcome. I've been reading a couple of things on the internet about this, and first let me just say that I think Obama made a mistake negotiating for this guy, but then again, I think everything Obama has done is wrong since he became president. So what else is new? But I'm reading that the Bergdahl father used to be a Calvinistic Christian.
Yeah.
Then he converted to Islam. Now, does that prove once saved, always saved isn't true, or what?
No, well, Art, if a Calvinist was answering that, the answer would be if he is truly Christian, then he will repent of his conversion to Islam and come back to the faith. if he dies a Muslim, then he was never truly a Christian. Calvinists don't hold to once saved, always saved. They hold to perseverance of the saints. So that's how a Calvinist would answer that. Yeah, but it's quite an unusual narrative. All right, let's just say that he had been a prisoner of war, taken in battle, fighting for our country heroically rather than being an alleged deserter. Would that have justified taking action like this?
No, it wouldn't. And when I was in Vietnam, and I was in Vietnam, that never would have happened. We do have an innocent Marine in jail in Mexico, and Obama won't pick up the phone to try to get him out.
Right. That's an issue raised by a caller at the end of the last minutes of the first hour. And then Steve Dace, radio host and columnist, also joined me in the first hour, and we talked about his Washington Times op-ed piece that while Mr. Obama has brought Sergeant Berdahl home, he has not made the effort, when he could have made the effort, to bring home American pastor Saeed Abdini, who is imprisoned in Iran. Hey, Art, thank you for weighing in. Obviously, not a fan of President Obama. That's understood. In terms of where he's coming from, I'm doing my best to look at this as an independent issue. I've got a few other things I want to talk to you about as well. Remember, hour and 5 minutes from now, my debate with preterist teacher, preterist scholar, Dr. Don Preston. On the air a few weeks ago, I put out some questions for preterists, some challenges, in a friendly way, saying, how will you respond to this? And Dr. Preston contacted our ministry and said, hey, I'll debate Dr. Brown. Glad to debate him on this subject about Israel, eschatology, future salvation of Israel, preterist-related issues. And, you know, there are a lot of folks out there, and the vast majority of leaders out there, I don't know, you don't know, you know, there's so many different circles and the body. So I didn't know Dr. Preston, and he sent me background, and he's had many debates with prominent folks. I said, great, let's do it, because you want to be fair to both sides. In other words, you want someone to fairly represent their side for the sake of their constituents. I want to fairly represent my side for the sake of my constituents or those who hold to similar views. So really looking forward to it very much. I think it's going to be a stimulating, intellectually vibrant, and scripturally rich debate. It's going to be done by Skype, all going well, so you'll be able to see us as we're each speaking. And my dear friend, Dr. James White, will be moderating. So that's just a little over an hour from now. Again, if you're on our email list, just check your emails, because you would have gotten a notice from us with a link. Otherwise, right around 4 o'clock, we'll be posting the link again on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page and on Twitter. In Israel, there is a great, great, great need to reach out via internet. Per person, basically, Israelis are on the internet more than any other nation in the world. And pretty soon, all of Tel Aviv is basically going to be wireless, free wireless, for instance, wherever you are. That's how far things are developed there. And by God's grace, excerpts of my 5-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, have been translated into Hebrew and put online for discussion for Israeli outreach. And we are about to release, we just have a few more videos to record, and then we're scheduled to release the brand new Real Messiah website, which will be the number one tool I've ever produced in terms of online outreach to Jewish people. And I want you to partner with us. You know that we're on the front lines. We each have our role to play. This is the role that God's given me at a number of fronts, including Jewish ministry, reaching the lost sheep of the house of Israel. We've never offered this together, but my 5-volume set, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, with postage about a $150 value, close to that, your gift of $100 or more, I want to send you the entire set. You'll enjoy having it. You'll be blessed to have it on yourself. You'll find it a rich resource for many years to come, and it'll help you to pray and partner with us for the salvation of Israel. $100 or more, we'll send you the 5-volume set. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to cover a few more issues in this last half hour on the line of fire today. 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to jump in at any point along the way. First, I want to read you something that Aaron posted on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. Again, I do not see the vast majority of posts that come in, as we'll often have over 20,000 comments a week on our Facebook page, plus all the other pages we have and websites and where we post articles. But I am able to catch a number of them. And this is one I was really glad to catch. Aaron, if you happen to be listening now, you know I interact with you on Facebook, but thanks for posting this. So I had David Kyle Foster on with me yesterday, shared his testimony, talked about his book, Love, Hunger. You can order the book in yesterday's broadcast on my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. And I said, all right, this is your story, drug addiction, sexual abuse, etc. Is this normal? And he said that his own experience in counseling for decades now with a ministry and his own experience living in the homosexual community was, yes, there was a disproportionate amount of sexual abuse suffered by those who are gay or lesbian growing up, or bisexual, we could have added that in. And two, that there was a disproportionate use of drugs, and it was not due to societal homophobia, but just part of a negative or wrong or destructive lifestyle. Now, my own studies have found that to be true. I've talked to people who have counseled thousands and have found that to be true. I'm also fully aware that many do not fit in that category, and that you have heterosexuals that fit in those categories of having been sexually abused and engaging in drug abuse and things like that, and you cannot make generalizations. Well, Aaron posted this on Facebook. Dear Dr. Brown, for every, quote, broken gay person like the one on your show today, there's a healthy and happy homosexual person. Not all of us are drug addicted, alcoholic, prostitutes who suffer from childhood sexual abuse. I want your people, Christians, to see happy, healthy people like myself who also happen to be gay. I'm not addicted to drugs or alcohol. In fact, I don't indulge in any addictive substances. I had a perfectly happy childhood, completely free of abuse. I love myself just as I am, and I think that you would love me too, just as I am, if you would let yourself. I have a very successful relationship, beautiful and smart and talented and amazing children, a very steady job, and a positive attitude about life. I'm a good person, also happen to be a homosexual person. Of course, Aaron, when folks hear you say I'm a good person, Christians would say, well, none of us are good in ourselves. In other words, we all fall short. That if you saw yourself compared to God's perfection, you would realize that you're not good, I'm not good in ourselves. But in the context of what you're saying, yes, I understand. I understand your point. And probably if we were neighbors, we'd be good, friendly neighbors. And I might think you're a great person in many respects, again, humanly speaking. Then as I reached out to Aaron and interacted, Aaron said this, thank you for letting me share here. I don't have very many opinions about God. I started listening to your show because I like radio voices. Yours is great. Thank you. Thanks for saying I've got a great radio voice. But I kept listening because I've never heard of many perspectives that I hear on your show. That debate about the Easter bunny hiding Easter eggs was my favorite so far. My partner's parents are evangelical missionaries, so I'm also trying to understand them by hearing what you say. I don't honestly understand the position on homosexuality, but we can just agree to disagree. We're both humans, and that is all that matters to me. Thanks for responding. Aaron, we are absolutely both humans. We are absolutely created by the same God, whether you know him or acknowledge him or understand him. And obviously, I do have a very different perspective on homosexuality in terms of God's intent. For example, when you mention your children, they're obviously the children that you produced with the help of another man, a male, and not with your partner. It just has to do with design and how God made us. But hopefully we will get to sit down face-to-face and interact. And as you felt it was important that my listeners heard that, I wanted to read it for them. All right, we'll be right back. I want to talk to you about what I'm calling Planned Parenthood's Pastoral Letter from Hell.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Indicates that abortion is currently the most divisive issue in America. Michael Brown, welcome back to The Line of Fire. Changing to another subject that I've been wanting to get into today. 42% of people saying it's morally acceptable and 48% saying it is morally wrong. Now, obviously, it's how the question's asked and exactly what is being phrased, what is morally acceptable, what is morally wrong. But obviously, we know how divisive this is, and obviously, we know that opinions have shifted. Now, before I get into what I'm calling Planned Parenthood's letter from hell, I'll probably have an op-ed piece that'll come out on that tomorrow, so stay tuned. Probably tomorrow night we'll post that. Euthanasia, similarly divisive, but with a record number of supporters. Euthanasia, of course, involves a choice of the person involved, which does change things dramatically. We're not talking about taking the life of an innocent baby in the womb that has no choice in the matter. But the point I want to make is this. I did not remember a lot in terms of Roe v. Wade. In 1973, I was 18 years old. I was saved. I was preaching. I went to college at 18, met Nancy when we were 19, met her. I was a believer. She was not. God saved her from her atheism and her lostness, brought us together. But I do not remember a lot of talk in the church where I was or in society around me about abortion. You have to understand, the church I was in was not socially focused. Our focus was on praying and getting in the Word and growing in the Lord and winning others to the Lord, which is always fundamental. The question is, if our calling is to go and make disciples, then when disciples are made, how do they live? What's our role as disciples? What was our role as disciples in the midst of the slave trade in the 1700s and 1800s? What would our role have been if we were in Nazi Germany, saving Jews and others? What's our role today combating human trafficking? What's our role today helping the poor and the needy? As disciples, how do we live? But when Roe v. Wade was declared the law and abortion on demand for any reason became the law in America, many thought it's over. That's it. The battle is lost. The tide cannot be turned. It's too late. This reflects growing national sentiment. And once a woman has been given, quote, the right to have an abortion, it's a right that she will never surrender. We're talking roughly half of the population being female, so it's not like we're talking about, you know, 1/100 of 1% of the population and we don't have to worry about what they're going to say or do or think. No, we're talking about women. And on top of that, young people would have been very, very strongly pro-abortion. Now, why do I raise that? Because the tide has turned. Roe v. Wade has not been overturned yet, and we still do not have in place adequate support mechanisms for those that choose to have their babies, and we need to have more of a culture of adoption in the church and things like this. I understand all of that. Yet the tide has turned in many ways unexpectedly, and it is the pro-abortion camp that is on the defensive and on the run, and even Planned Parenthood changing their slogan and, coming up with what has to be the most horrific, ironically wrong, stupidly framed, self-defeating slogans I've ever heard. Planned Parenthood developed the slogan, "Your mommy will thank you." That's if you don't get aborted. Otherwise, your mommy will thank you. Unreal. Unreal. But all that to say, I realize that many things change. Many things change in terms of societal perspective. And just like we're told nothing's ever going to turn the tide with homosexual activism and this is here to stay and redefined marriage is here to stay and so on and so forth. I understand the issues involved. I understand where society's at. I understand how things look. I also know that there are bigger issues and bigger factors and there is God as well. That's why I am absolutely the last one to say, well, we just throw in the towel. No, of course not. Of course not. Now, before I read this Planned Parenthood pastoral letter. Let me just read to you from my article on With It. You can read it by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, clicking on latest article. You'll see one, Rush Limbaugh, the drag queen and the judge, and then you'll see this one, On With It. In the article, I mentioned, having just returned from Israel, how deeply impacted I was by the fact that one man, Eliezer Ben Yehuda, was responsible, naturally speaking, responsible for reviving this language. It had been used in prayer, religious Jews praying in Hebrew, religious Jews studying in Hebrew, a certain level of writing of scholarly academic works in Hebrew, but as a living language, as something developing new vocabulary and something that kids are speaking in the streets and people are doing business with and so on. No, absolutely not. So Eliezer Ben Yehuda, as a young man, comes down sick with tuberculosis. When he finally leaves for Israel, he's given 2 months to live. And in point of fact, much of his life, it was looked at he's going to go any moment. Well, here's what happens. He gets this vision to restore the language. He gets this vision, and in a blurb to Robert St. John's classic biography of Ben Yehuda, it's called Tongue of the Prophets, the blurb states the biography of Ben Yehuda is the touching and inspiring story of a frail scholar burning with an inner fire whose fanatical devotion to a single idea triumphed against overwhelming odds. I take that to heart. I take that to heart personally. John Wesley wrote to William Wilberforce February 24th, 1791, just a few days before he died at the age of 88. William Wilberforce was a member of Parliament. He had been converted through Wesley's ministry. He wanted to do among the rich what Wesley had done among the poor. He wanted to see the reformation of morals in England, and he wanted to abolish the slave trade in the United Kingdom. It seemed completely impossible. Slavery and the slave trade abolished? Impossible! You have to understand the slave trade had been a way of life for the British Empire for centuries. It was deeply intertwined with the economy. It was affecting millions of people. And this is part of what Wesley wrote to Wilberforce. 88 years old, Wesley is. Unless the divine power has raised you up to be as Athanasius Contramundum. Athanasius was a courageous church leader who stood his ground, hence Athanasius against the world, Athanasius Contramundum. Unless God's raised you up to be like him, Wesley said, I see not how you can go through your glorious enterprise in opposing that execrable villainy, in other words, that cursed villainy, which is the scandal of religion of England and of human nature. Unless God has raised you up for this very thing, you will be worn out by the opposition of men and devils. But if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them together stronger than God? Oh, be not weary of well-doing. Go on in the name of God and in the power of his might till even American slavery, the vilest that ever saw the sun, shall vanish away before it. It happened! Wilberforce labored for years before finally seeing the legislation passed, and then it was after he had left this world that slave trade was abolished from America. But God used him to turn the tide. In the natural, it's impossible. Trust me, friends, on the front lines, you're the first ones to get hit. There is a lot of attack. There's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of junk that comes against you. Hey, I'm made for this, but I assure you, if you were put in my shoes and you weren't made for it, you'd be running the first day. Just like if I was in your shoes and wasn't made for it, I'd be running the first day. There's battle. And as I note in my article, in our own strength and wisdom, we will fail. Count on it. The opposition is too intense and the spiritual and natural forces we are combating too powerful. You want to see revival in your community? You want to see the inner cities reached? You want to combat human trafficking? You want to overturn Roe v. Wade? You want to turn back the tide of homosexual activism? You want to see Israel saved? You want to see revival in the Muslim world? Whatever it is in the natural, it's impossible but God. That's why I say this is not bad news to me. It's good news, since we're not relying on our strength or wisdom or power or networking or funding or abilities. We're relying on God himself. As Wesley wrote, but if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them stronger than God? That's the perspective we must hold on to if we are to see victory and transformation come. That's why Paul exhorted the Ephesians to be strengthened by the Lord and by his vast strength, Ephesians 6:10. We're leaning on his strength, his might, his power, his wisdom, doing his will, not ours. As I've reminded the Lord many times in prayer over the years, Lord, this wasn't my idea. This is your idea. This is not something I dreamed up. This is not a task I created. I'm only seeking to do your will. It was only after decades of frustration and defeat that Wilberforce saw victory come. And again, as they say, the rest is history. And this was the perspective that we're doing God's will, that he's for us. This was the perspective that empowered missionaries to take the gospel to the ends of the earth, overcoming impossible odds and facing down demonic strongholds that most of us could never imagine. They often did it virtually alone, with limited funding, serving in the midst of hostile, foreign surroundings, not to mention battling through weakness and sickness and abandonment. Yet their eyes were fixed on the one who said, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." King Jesus leading the way. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm serious about it. I'm really serious about it, about moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. I really believe God is at work. As dire as things seem around us in America, I can probably document how dark and dire it is better than most. What some feel is great progress and change, I feel... are terrible steps in the wrong direction. So many ways. Last thing in my mind is that we're supposed to get physically, it's time for the revolution, where are the guns? No, not that kind. Not violence, not hatred, not intimidation, God forbid. But overcoming lies with truth, overcoming darkness with light, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming the power of the flesh with the power of the spirit. Great quote from theologian and Baptist leader A.A. Hodge from, well over 100 years ago. It is easier to find a score of men wise enough to discover the truth than to find one intrepid enough in the face of opposition to stand up for it. Yeah, come on. It's time to stand up for that which is right with humility, with grace towards those we oppose, but unflinchingly, standing for truth. So the end of my article, on with it. I quote from William Carey, known as the father of modern missions. Read his biography, find out what he suffered for the gospel. In India, he said, "Now all my friends are but one. I rejoice, however, that he is all-sufficient and can supply all my wants, spiritual and temporal." J. Hudson Taylor, another missionary pioneer, read his biography and see how he suffered. He said, "We are a supernatural people, born again by a supernatural birth. We wage a supernatural fight and are taught by a supernatural teacher, led by a supernatural captain to assured victory." 1 John 5:4, "Whatever has been born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory by which we overcome the world, even our faith." That's why Salvation Army leader Catherine Booth could say on her deathbed to her husband William, "The waters are rising, but so am I. I am not going under, but over." As for Planned Parenthood, sooner or later, you'll go under. Sooner or later, it's inevitable that you'll go under, that what you are supporting will no longer be underwritten by our government, because it is destructive in the taking of many, many lives. And those of you who really think you're doing good and really think you are helping and really think you are serving the poor and the needy, may God deliver you from your deception. Planned Parenthood has issued a, quote, pastoral letter to prospective abortion clients. It says it is from the Clergy Advocacy Board. "Dear friend, the decision to have an abortion is personal." Again, this is from Planned Parenthood. "Though your reasons may be complicated in private, you're not alone. As religious leaders from a number of religious traditions, we're here to support you in your decision." Many people wrongly assume that all religious leaders disapprove of abortion. The truth is that abortion is not even mentioned in the scriptures, Jewish or Christian, and there are clergy and people of faith from all denominations who support women making this complex decision. With all respect to the clergy involved in this letter, are you telling me that the Bible does not speak of the full humanity of the baby in the womb? That the Bible does not speak of us being fearfully and wonderfully made in the womb? That the Bible does not speak about Jacob and Esau as if they were fully people, not only people, but with their descendants as nations as well, two nations wrestling in the womb. Are you telling me that the Bible does not speak of John the Immerser leaping in his mother's womb, his mother Elizabeth's womb, when Miriam, the mother of Yeshua, comes into the room pregnant? Are you telling me that from a biblical perspective, if John the Immerser was aborted, that that would not have been taking of a human life? If Yeshua was aborted in the womb, that that would not have been taking of a human life? That when Jeremiah and Paul speak of being called from their mother's wombs, that does not point to the humanity of the people involved? And that all the calls for mercy for the underprivileged, for the hurting, for those who cannot defend themselves certainly apply to the baby in the womb? The fact that there are clergy and people of faith from all denominations who support women making the decision to have an abortion just shows their apostasy from the truth of Scripture. The beliefs of each person are deserving of respect. Planned Parenthood letter says that each person deserves care and compassion. No one should be allowed to force their faith teachings on anyone else. No, we shouldn't be allowed to force our faith teachings on anyone else. But you better believe we should be able to tell these women there is a better way. We should be able to say, hey, before you do it, look at this ultrasound and see what you're dealing with, and let us give you options and other ways. And by all means, our government should not be supporting the taking of the life of a baby in the womb. Look, I cannot imagine the trauma a woman gone through who's been raped now finds out she's pregnant. I'm not a woman. No matter how hard I try, I can't relate to that sense of violation there would be. Nonetheless, the question remains, is that a baby in the womb, and is there someone who would care for that baby if that woman could not? And I know nowadays the vast majority of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are killed in the womb. And the parents of kids with Down syndrome say, yeah, a lot of challenges, but we wouldn't trade this for anything in terms of the preciousness of this child. And that's why many friends who are older and who might be more likely to have a child with Down syndrome tell the doctor, we're not doing a test. We don't. Either way, this is our child. We're having this baby. We believe this decision is yours, made with your doctor and anyone else you choose to bring into the conversation, such as spouse, partner, parent, clergy person. Please, if you're going to make the decision, make it with a clergy person who knows the Lord and knows what the Word says and can talk about life and hope and truth here. Allow yourself to be at peace with your decision. God loves you and is with you no matter what you decide. Is Planned Parenthood saying that all of those of us who oppose abortion, that God is with us as we stand for that? Is God's with everyone no matter what they do? Is that scriptural? Or is it scriptural to say God loves us no matter what we do, but he does not approve of everything that we do, and there are consequences to our actions? I hope to write about this tonight, Planned Parenthood's pastoral letter from hell. Friends, if you appreciate the work that we're doing, so many of you say, Mike, you're like my voice. You say the things that I want to say. You say them on national radio. You say them on national TV. You say them in your articles. You articulate what's in my heart. Well, that's why our radio announcer every day says, your voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. I am not just trying to do a show and have my show. When I'm on the air, I'm trying to speak for you and be your mouthpiece. And in that sense, serve the Lord and serve you and society at the same time. Partner with us. Your gift of $100 or more will send you my 5-volume set, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. Nothing like it's ever been done. It's a field that I had to kind of plow the ground in because it hadn't been done. By God's grace, it's something he's given me to do. I'm hoping that others will build on it, continue to move us forward. 5-volume beautiful set with postage is worth about $150, but your gift of $100 or more, I want to send it to you. Some can help with $500 or $1,000. Not a dime will go into my pocket. Every dime will go right back out to our outreach work, to radio, to being a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. So call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, just as the tide is turning against Roe v. Wade when that once seemed impossible, the tide is going to turn in many other ways by God's grace.